Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashbery. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1370 presents a story from longtime Life Rattle contributor and previous host of this show, Victoria Martinez. Victoria Martinez was born in Manila, the capital of the Philippines, in 1953. After college, she left Manila and spent 2 years traveling around Belgium and Luxembourg before landing a job with an oil company in Oman, where she worked for 3 years. Martinez then came to Toronto in 1988. She currently works for a law firm in Toronto. Martinez has written a series of stories for Life Rattle about her life in the Philippines. Tonight, we're treated to the fun that ensues for a 4-year-old girl after a hurricane in Manila. There is flooding, destruction, a poisonous water snake, and a giant lizard that gets stewed. Spoiler alert, it tastes like chicken. You're listening to Life Rattle from Toronto, Ontario. And please be advised that some of Life Rattle's stories contain language and situations that some listeners may find offensive, so listener discretion is advised. Let's listen now as Victoria Martinez reads her story, Lizard Stew.
Lizard Stew by Victoria Martinez. Manila, August 1957. My brother Eric and I peek through the gaps in the wooden planks of the wall and watch Typhoon Helen pluck galvanized iron sheets from roofs of houses and scatter uprooted trees in the middle of the roadway like spilled matchsticks. Rainwater pelts our house and seeps through the gaps, wetting our faces and dripping inside, forming small puddles on the bare wooden floor. We wipe our faces with the palms of our hands and peek again. A table made of bamboo slats floats where the tin house across the street just stood. An orange-colored kitten clings atop the table, its paws clawing the bamboo slats, its faint meows drowned by the wind and an old Canada Dry billboard knocking against the bamboo table. Flood waters push the bamboo table against bent banana trees that once fenced the tin house. We've had no power for 2 days, and still the man from the electric company arrives, wading in waist-deep water to get a reading of the electric meter. The old lady who sells fish and vegetables passes by, the end of her faded sarong skirt floating behind her in the flood waters, the wide-brimmed wicker basket with her meager wares balanced on her head, catching rainwater. When at noon the rain stops, Mother opens the window shutters and allows us to look outside. Our front yard looks like a large swimming pool, the lone guava tree a marker where our yard and the roadside separate. The neighborhood kids play in the flood water, diving, swimming, screaming, laughing and splashing the coffee-colored water at each other. "Can I go play with them?" I ask Mother, who sits on the floor sewing buttons on an old shirt of Father's. "No, you can't," she replies, without taking her eyes off her sewing. "But how come they can play?" I point towards the window. I fold the hem of my shorts and my sleeves, all set to frolic with the kids. Suddenly, we hear a chorus of shrieks and loud splashing of water. I rush to look out the window. "What's happening?" Mother asks. "Cousin Andy climbed the guava tree and the branch broke and he fell on the water, head first," I say, laughing. "He must have swallowed some water." I kneel beside Mother, propping my head close to her. "But why can't I go?" She cuts the thread with her teeth. "Because the water is still high and you don't know how to swim," she says, still not looking at me. I'm 4. I will learn how to swim. No, she raises her voice. But my cousins Andy and Regina are there. I'll play with them. Which part of no do you not understand? She reaches to slap my behind. Flood water is dirty. You understand that? Dirty. You'll get sick. You'll have dysentery, diarrhea, ear infection. Do you want that? But why do other mothers let their children play if it's bad? I ask, fighting tears. I'm not the other mothers, she snaps. I'm tired of this. Stop it, or else. She goes back to her sewing. Eric sits on a step of the stairs not submerged in water. He moves his legs forward and backward, feet in the flood water, making swishing sounds and drenching the steps. Mother, Eric's playing in the water. Never mind him, she says. She finishes the shirt and starts to darn one of my father's work pants. Let him play. When he starts to itch later, then he's going to get a good spanking. She pauses, then shouts towards the door. Enrique, come back up and wash your feet, quick. Eric gets up, climbs a few steps and says, but I'm waiting for father. Mother doesn't say anything. Can I wait for father too on the steps? I ask. No, Victoria. I said the water's dirty, and if you fall, you wouldn't know how to swim. The water is well above your head. She puts the shirt down and grabs my arm, her face red and angry. She waves a finger at me. Didn't you see the meter man earlier? The water's up to his waist. Didn't you see him? I nod. I wince as she tightens her grip on my arm, then abruptly releases it. I climb on the chair by the window and kneel on top to watch the children. Rain starts again. Endless ripples etch the water's surface. Suddenly, the children scream and scurry away. Snake! They chorus. There's a big snake! Ha! Ah! The children, even the ones known for their toughness and bullying, scamper and run in different directions, away from our house, their voices shrieking, their eyes bulging and their lips purple-blue, both from cold and fear. Most snakes in the Philippines are deadly. Mother, look, there it is! I point to the middle of the flooded front yard. The snake's head sticks out amid ripples of water. Its tongue darts, its steely color the same as the dark overcast sky. Mother stands next to me by the window and looks out. Enrique, there's a snake. Get out of there, quick! Eric scampers to go up the stairs, but trips on one of the wooden steps, scratching one knee against a rough corner. He wails as he hugs his bleeding knee. Mother walks over to the door and pinches his ear. I laugh. Eric lunges at me, his hand balled into a fist. Mother, still holding his ear, he gives a small cry as mother's sharp nails dig deeper. Stop it, mother shouts at Eric. Go and wash your feet. Sissy, sissy, I say. She's teasing me. It's my ear's turn to be pinched. I force myself not to cry from the pain. I stick my tongue out at Eric. You're a big sissy. Mother walks over to the window and slaps me. You stop, okay? You stop. Go kneel in the corner. She points at a corner of the room nearest the window. I sneer at Eric as I sit in the corner. He sticks his tongue out at me. Mother sees him and she pinches his arm. Go in the opposite corner, now, and you stop bickering. One more peep. When mother finishes her sewing, she moves to the kitchen, actually the third corner of our small house. She puts rice in a cast iron pot, washes it and sets it on the kerosene stove, occasionally glancing at Eric and me. I stick my tongue out at Eric and mouth sissy from my corner. He waves his fist at me. Whenever mother catches him or me, she says, I'm warning you. When she isn't looking, I tiptoe to the window. My corner is only 3 steps from the window. Mother, she's not in her corner, Eric calls out. Mother walks up to Eric to slap his behind. I dart back to the corner and press my thumbs on my temples, then wave my fingers up and down as I wiggle my tongue, roll my eyes, and shake my head side to side at Eric. He makes small whimpering sounds. When Mother looks at me, I quickly cross my arms and look down on the floor. The power had just been restored when suddenly we hear loud splashing of water and neighbors shouting, "There it is! Oh my God, it's huge! Don't go near it, it's dangerous! Yeah, it's like a snake, it has poison! There, it's going inside the house! Irma, Irma," someone calls my mother. I run to the window. "Mother, Vic is at the window," Eric says. "I'm just looking," I say, waving a fist at him. "Who's that?" Mother asks as she wipes her hand with a towel. "It's Alingsela," I answer. "They're looking at something. It's under our house. Maybe it's a boa consistor." "Constrictor," Eric corrects me, stressing each syllable. "There's no boa constrictor in the Philippines, tanga." "There is now come to get you, huh?" "Stop it," Mother hisses. At this instant, Father arrives, his pants rolled up above his knees, although the water only stands ankle deep, his shoes in one hand, a small paper bag containing the rest of our supper in the other. "What is it?" he asks the people gathered on the side of the road facing our house. "Bayawak," exclaims Alingsela. "A giant lizard. It went underneath your house." She motions with her one hand that holds a thin brown cheroot. Father calmly wades towards our house through the knee-deep water of our front yard, which is much lower than the road. He looks up, motioning Mother to come to the stairs. He hands her his shoes and the paper bag. "The children?" he asks. "In here." I follow Mother and start down the steps too. "Go back inside," Father yells. I go back inside. Eric, eyes still red from crying, makes a face at me. I ignore him. Father goes underneath the house. We hear the soft rustling of water as he moves. The lower part of our house has 3 walled sides. Father keeps a little workshop there. He has also made a wooden bed where he and Mother sleep on warm days. Suddenly, we hear a loud thud on the floor below us, then a sudden rush of water. Father's figure appears in the doorway. He rushes in, not wiping his feet, leaving wet marks on the floor. He walks to the far end of the house where his rifle hangs between the wooden beams of the exposed roof. "What happened?" Mother asks. "I hit its tail and now it's between the beams." He points a finger towards the floor. "You stay with the kids in that corner when I go down," he says as he motions to the corner where Mother banished me earlier. Father lifts his lean 6-foot frame with 1 foot on a chair to get the rifle. Our dining table has a small drawer where we put our cutlery. Mother opens it, reaches for something at the back of the drawer, and takes out a small red tube with gold-colored ends. She hands it to Father. Father, clutching his rifle between his knees, snaps open the tube and pours tiny silver-colored pellets in his cupped hand. He pours the pellets through a small hole of the rifle. A few drop on the floor, and I quickly pick them up. I place them in my palm and stand beside him, offering him the pellets. "Look at her. She's not afraid to be near this thing," he says to my mother, then glances at Eric, who sits cowering in a corner. Father points the barrel of the rifle towards the floor and starts to pump it, making shooting sounds. "It should be okay," he says after some time, cradling the rifle in his hand as if to weigh it. Then he goes back downstairs. Mother gathers Eric and me as we wait by the window. Eric sits on the floor in the corner, his arms around his knees, fear etched on his face, quietly whimpering. I stand beside Mother and hold her skirt. Is it going to bite us? Will we die if it bites us? I ask. Shh! Bang! Bang! The house seems to shake at the sound of the rifle firing. A hole the size of my little fist appears in the middle of the floor. I cover my face with Mother's skirt as I bury my head behind her knee. Father reappears holding the dead lizard by its tail. Its mashed head almost touches the floor. Its iridescent, scaly skin gleams in the fluorescent light. Blood drips on the wet floor. After supper, Uncle Ising, my father's brother-in-law, and a short man with a funny voice arrive. Your neighbor Aling Sela told me about the Bayawak, Uncle Ising says. He points to the man with him. This is Joe Santos. You remember him, don't you? He does hides and sells them to the shoemakers in Marikina. The man smiles and nods at Mother. How big is this lizard you caught? He asks, taking off his shoes and leaving them by the door. Father shows them the dead lizard hanging from the roof beam. Mr. Joe Santos silently examines the dead giant lizard. I've seen the kind before, Father tells the two men, and we ate it. I think this one's eatable too. Oh, good, Uncle Ising exclaims. Here, I brought this. He proudly raises the paper bag he holds in his hand and takes out two flat bottles of Tanduay rum. I'm not quite sure about that, Mr. Joe Santos says. I've also eaten giant lizard once, but it didn't look quite like this. But you could be right, you know. The men debate briefly, but agree with Father that the lizard is the eatable kind. Mr. Joe Santos then inserts a small knife through the flesh, delicately extracting the meat whole from the shimmering skin that lies flat on the newspaper-covered table. He gazes at the skin, hanging limply from his hands like a prized possession. Uncle Ising chops the lizard meat while Father goes to the corner store to buy vinegar, garlic, and soy sauce. After an hour, the aroma of meat stew fills our little house. Although I have eaten dinner, the sweet aroma of vinegar and garlic accented with a single bay leaf leaves me hungry. I watch as the men sit at a table with their glasses half filled with rum. Want to taste it? Father asks Mother. She shakes her head and winces. How about you, Eric? Eric looks at the bowl on top of the table, then runs to the window and throws up. You! Father turns to me. Do you want to taste this? Turning to Uncle Ising, he says, she's more like a boy than that one. He forks a piece of meat and waves me to come close. I walk over to Father and open my mouth as he places the piece of meat on my tongue. I chew. The soft, sweet meat tastes like chicken breast. The men stare at me. Father says, ha ha ha, she's going to spit it. You wait. Maybe she won't. I think she's like your sisters-in-law. She's a tomboy, Uncle Ising jokes. He's talking about Mother's two butch sisters. It's in the blood. Don't be surprised, Mr. Joe Santos says. She's going to spit it, my father chuckles. I try to swallow the lizard meat, but it won't go down my throat. The three men watch me as they drink their rum, so I pretend to skip and sing with my mouth full. I turn my back when I feel my face redden and about to hurl. The moment they look away, I lie on my stomach on the floor, pretending to peek through the hole. Then I spit the meat and keep on spitting until the taste of the lizard is gone from my mouth. I slowly stand up, walking around as if to survey the hole, nodding my head and wiping my hand on my shorts. Gone? Mr. Joe Santos asks me. I nod. You actually ate it? Uncle Ising asks. Yeah, I reply, nodding frantically. Come here, father says. Open your mouth. I open my mouth. He holds my chin and tilts my head side to side. Lift your tongue. He peers closer. Sure you didn't spit it? I shake my head no. Do you want some more? Here. Uh-uh. I shake my head no.
That was Lizard Stew, written and read by Victoria Martinez. That concludes Life Rattle number 1370. Arnie Ackman recorded Victoria Martinez reading her story. My name is Virginia Ashbery. Life Rattle is produced from Toronto and was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman.